Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning in to Truth and Justice. I am Zach Weaver, and you are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 14, Episode 23. This week, we heard Bob's interview with Ken Davies, the host of the Mysterious Case of Fred the Head podcast. This was a very interesting conversation and an introduction to this mind-boggling case. I'm joined by Bob Ruff and Janet Varney, and we are here to answer all your questions. But before we get into that, we have a bunch of housekeeping.
All right. Well, welcome back, everybody. We are glad to be back from our vacation. We had a week off. I went to Hilton Head Island, South Carolina with my family. We had a nice relaxing time around the pool. I got to listen to a lot of podcasts, including one that I'm going to talk to you about here in just a few seconds that we have coming up. So first of all, we have very few questions this week. So this will be kind of a short episode, which we'll get to in a minute. We do have a resident expert in Fred the Head podcast. Our very own Janet Varney somehow managed to binge the 48 hours of podcast.
I got That's way crazy. Into it. And I was listening to it at a slightly faster speed, but it wasn't out of any disrespect whatsoever. It was that I was so into it and I didn't know how much time I was going to have before. I kind of forgot that we weren't doing the episode on Sunday. So I forgot that I had as much time as I did. And I just went crazy and was like, I need to listen to all of this. I can't stop listening. I'm going to speed it up to 1.25 or 1.5 just to keep hearing more of the story. I mean, I think it's such a great crossover for listeners of your podcast and of that podcast. Yeah. Because he just takes you through the weeds and it's fascinating. And you feel like even the stuff that doesn't really have anything, end up having anything to do with this actual person that they're trying to identify, even the side stories are like really interesting and his passion is very contagious. So I thought it was
great. That's awesome. We're going to pick your brain a little bit about that. I did listen to more of it on my drive down to South Carolina too. And then I got distracted onto something else. And as Caroline in the chat pointed out, on my vacation, I went to Bucky's.
Oh, okay. I've been to Bucky's. Did you go to Beef Jerky Wall?
Oh, yeah. They got a beef jerky. They got an everything wall. And I was...
Am I really missing out that much on this?
Oh, my God, dude. I've been to one in Texas.
Is this a regional thing? Like, what's up?
It's a South thing. And so I didn't know they were... Like, we were driving through... We stayed in Sevierville, Tennessee, the first night on the way down there.
Did you go to the knife shop?
The what?
The knife shop in Sevierville.
I certainly did not.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
We were just staying there for the night. We pull off the exit, and I'm like... Is there a Bucky's at this exit? So like the whole night, I'm like, guys, in the morning, because Bella and I, we have a few things that we like to do together. Driving snacks are we're connoisseurs of driving snacks. Excellent. Anytime Bella and I go on a road trip, we load up on driving snacks.
So love
she's
it.
Pretty excited. And then there's also appetizers and desserts. We're big on those too. So I think I gained 15 pounds this week while we were in Hilton Head. All three of those things. But I'm like, so nobody else gave a shit. And Bella and I, She's like, Dad, tell me about the Bucky's. I'm like, oh, let me tell you about the Bucky's. There's walls of snacks. They're all over the place. But anyway, it was a really nice time. It was, for those of you that don't know, I think I mentioned this before, it's my daughter Bella's senior year of high school. So we let her pick what she wanted to do for spring break. It's our last spring break with her. Hmm. And she wanted to go somewhere warm where there was sun, where she could sunbathe. She took a friend with. And so we went and got a place down in Hilton Head. And we just did that all week, is just lay out in at the pool and the beach. And it was great. So thank you guys I'm always thankful for you guys for allowing us to have that time off and then still coming back and joining us when we come back. So thanks for coming back again.
Yeah.
That being said, I want to go through, especially as we have some time because we don't have many questions, where we're at with things. And I was going to go through this stuff anyway, but I want somebody in the follow-up thread. I don't even know if you caught it, Janet, because it was kind of late coming in. Somebody was like, man, I don't like what we're doing right now. Yeah. I missed the investigative podcast. Mm-hmm. So that one of the two questions we have, that one's gone. I got it. but I do want to talk a little bit about like what's going on right now. So like this is still very much real time investigative wrongful conviction podcast. So for those of you that maybe have missed or haven't caught up for a little while, don't know what's going on. I am deep into our next case. We're having hangups with getting all the documents we need, but I'm still working on it actively and constantly in the background. I've done interviews with people. I've got an affidavit signed that is going to be huge. There's a lot of stuff going on. But I can't start the show until I have all the documents. I need to cross every T, dot every I. And so that's what's going on. So what you're hearing now, and you know, we kind of started doing this a couple of years ago, and it kind of gives me a minute to breathe too, is where we come in kind of like the undisclosed type format where, you know, we go in and we do a series on a case and we work it through to the end and then take a break and we do interviews and just basically be very dynamic. Whatever's like in the news, whatever's happening right now, we'll just do episodes. to keep everybody talking about whatever things we think are important in true crime and in the podcasting world while we get ready for the next season. And that change, we've been doing it for a few years, but in the past, what I would do was when we wrap the last episode of this season, we start the first episode of the next season. And that is extremely taxing on me, and it makes a struggle with production, and it's hard to keep up with. And
I also don't think it's fair to the cases. Like, it's not fair to the case that you're leaving behind, so to speak, because obviously you're still working on it, which,
yeah.
And it's also, you know, you want to give a little breathing room, I think, to both sides.
And really understand everything. In this particular one, and you guys will see once we do it, like there's very good reason why there are interviews that I want to get done and affidavits I need to get taken care of before it becomes public what we're doing. So there's some methodology behind that too. But, and then some of that was just me chatting with Robbie about it, like what they did with Undisclosed and stuff. And she's like, yeah, that's why we always, you know, they had the advantage of there was three of them. So it would be essentially each one of them would do one case a year.
Right.
And Colin would kind of fill in between seasons. And then when Susan was working on her season, Robbie was doing background on hers. And so that's kind of where we're at right now. So I just want to assure everyone that we're still going on with the mission that we're dedicated to do. We're just kind of giving the space to make sure that we're doing it right. And the other thing is that Janet just mentioned, I'm never done with cases. So the other 12 cases we've already done, I'm still working on those too. You know, I was doing a lot of stuff in season 12 over the last couple of weeks too, on top of that. So there's all this stuff so it just kind of starts to pile on top of everything. So just so you know, that's coming now. As Caroline asked on that topic, we've had several snags with the open records request in this case. I think that my personal feeling is that the powers that be know there's a serious problem with this case. So I filed the open records request for the police. I have the trial transcripts and I have some documents, but I don't have the police. And I've got like one main police report, but that's all I have. I filed the open records request with the police department to get the case file so I could have all the crime scene photos, all the stuff that we always work with, the stuff that we need, so I can confirm the stuff that I've learned through reading the rest of the stuff that I have. And in Michigan, they have 5 days to respond. They then told me they need another, they're allowed a 10-day extension. They requested the 10-day extension. So I'd wait another. So that's three, because 15 business days. So that's 3 weeks. I wait for that. End of the 3 weeks, nothing. I bump them again. And then they tell me, a previous chief shredded all those documents, which I still don't know if it's true. And also, they knew that on day one. They didn't need to wait 3 weeks to tell me that.
Why would that ever happen anyway? Like, a chief of police is going to be like, I'll just take these documents and shred them from this case that I'm required to keep documents on.
Yeah, that story will come out in the season because I got a little bit of background on it. But so that happens. And then that's why I was asking if we have any Michigan attorneys in the our group, because, you know, I don't want to let that sleep regardless of what happens with getting the documents. If that's true, they violated Michigan records retention laws. This is a case that the person is eligible for appeal. And now the documents are supposedly destroyed. So I don't want to let that go. Like, I'm not just going to accept it.
Right.
Let me put it that way. Like, if there's consequences for it, they need to face those consequences. So that's in the works. So then I was like, well, the police always copy their case file to the prosecutor's office, and the clerk's office should have all of the trial exhibits, which should include crime scene photos and all that stuff. File open records request with the district clerk. And they come back and go, we don't have that stuff. You need to go to the prosecutor's office. So then I had to file an open records request with the prosecutor's office. They, after 5 days, say, we're taking the 10-day extension, which today was the end of the 10-day extension. And then today, I get a phone call. Hey, I just want to, you know, I pulled the file and I've got two banker's boxes full of stuff, but there's no evidence in here. There's no crime scene photos. There's no audio tapes that you requested. There's no transcripts, none of that stuff. And a lot of it's work product. And so I was actually at school. I was like in the hallway at school when they called me, and I'm like, what do you mean you don't have any of that stuff? It's like, it's just none of that stuff's in here. We don't keep that stuff.
Right.
I very bluntly said, yes, you do. Like, it's somewhere. And this, right. And by the way, the woman I spoke with was very cordial, very nice, and she was definitely trying to be helpful. And she said she's new, she's still learning. So there's a possibility it's going to work out. But that's just so you guys know the stuff that I'm dealing with. And I just told her, she's like, well, I can talk to the DA about tomorrow. I said, talk to the DA and ask them, what if this person is granted a new trial? How would they try them without any evidence? None. And the answer is, they can't, which means They would not not have that information.
Mm-hmm.
It's somewhere.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You need to find it.
Right.
And so that's where I'm at right now. So now they are, she's going to talk to the district attorney, see if they can find it somewhere else. I told her to go check with the clerk. The clerk should be the custodian of the trial exhibits usually in most municipalities. So anyway, that's what that, just so you guys know, like we're not sleeping on this. Like I'm actively working on that case, but that's what I'm fighting with right now is I can't start the season without the case file. Like I have to have that. And so we're fighting for that. So it's got to exist somewhere. Again, I refuse to believe that those documents don't exist. Again, they have to be ready at any case that if the conviction is ever overturned, they need to retry. Whether they retry this person or retry someone else, they still need the evidence. So in the meantime, we're going to continue on. I'm going to try to give you guys episodes that you'll find interesting along the way, which is was kind of the plan between the two seasons, just taking a little longer than I thought. But I have two coming up that I think you guys will be very interested in. As I mentioned, I got distracted by another podcast on the way while I was driving. And that was a bunch of people kept telling me about this Murder 101 podcast about this sociology teacher in Tennessee who had his class investigate this series of murders, and they solved it. They actually figured out who the serial killer, they connected these cases, identified several victims, and played a big part in the person actually getting arrested. It's fascinating to me. As you guys know, I'm also a teacher. I teach high school. I teach broadcasting and not criminology or sociology, which is a bummer because I would like to do the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a listener, and I apologize to that listener because I can't remember who it was. I was trying to figure out like on Twitter and stuff, like how to find the teacher.
Yeah.
And then somebody sent me like the school's website, and they're like, well, it just, it's in the directory. There is an email.
Just like that.
And the worst part was that was before I left on break. And then this morning, or not this morning, Sunday, I was like, shoot. I'm like, where was that? Was that an email? Was it a DM? I'm searching everywhere for this link they sent me. I'm like, idiot, you're an investigator. How about you just go to the school website to the directory and look at, there it is.
Yeah.
So tomorrow at 4:30 p.m. Eastern time for our patrons, if you guys would like to join in on the conversation live while we're recording it, so you get a little early access to it. So look on your Patreon newsfeed for that. 4:30 p.m. on Wednesday. So when you're hearing this on Friday, obviously this was in the past. But for those of you that are watching live right now, at 4:30 p.m. Eastern time, I'm going to be interviewing Alex Campbell, who was the teacher who led those students through this process. And I'm super excited to talk to him. So that will be Sunday's episode this week. Not sure what next week is going to be yet. I had one on the books, but we had scheduling conflicts. So I could tell you what's going to happen 2 weeks from now. After that, I don't know what's going to be between. But I'm going to be talking to Rabia Chowdhury and Colin Miller, who are both coming on the show we're going to talk a little bit about Adnan. And also, if you have not heard the news, Undisclosed is coming back. Rabia and Colin are going to relaunch Undisclosed with a new case, and we're going to be talking about that.
Nice.
So that will be next Sunday. What else do I have here? Oh, thank you, Zach. I that happened when I was on break, and I forgot all about it. Also do have an update from a case when we started doing the missing persons cases. For those of you guys that remember this, we had the one case from Maine. It was the Alex Jackson, who had gone missing. And if you remember, I actually had a couple listeners, listener Devin, I was DMing with her, and she sent me the screenshots from our discussion back then. That was a case that, if you guys remember, I was like really into it. Like I went into full investigative mode. Mm-hmm. I actually called and talked to the detective. Oh my God.
You and I had like an hour and a half phone call while I was walking. Remember, I was walking in Providence, and I was like, I can't hang up yet. I'm fixated on this.
Yeah, I could not let it go. I was convinced I don't think I ever said this on the podcast, but for the people, Janet, that talked to me and listeners that I was sharing with, and what I talked to the police about was based on what I was seeing. And because I looked much deeper than what we got into on the podcast, mm-hmm. I really thought that there was a possibility that Alex's friend Joe had murdered him and disposed of the body and truck on their property. I mean, I had like property records and GIS photos of the area, and was like trying to pinpoint where stuff could be. Well, just last week, Joe was arrested for Alex's murder. So that is it. Now, I want to be clear.
That doesn't mean
he was arrested.
Right.
He was charged. He is not convicted. and everything, because I've been trying to get my hands on the documents, because that case is, it was just something about it really tugged at me, and it just seemed like a very solvable case. But everything is under seal right now. So we know that they have not located Alex's body, but he was arrested for the murder, and the probable cause affidavit so far is under seal. So we don't know what evidence they used. It looked like Joe was arrested for a domestic violence charge at the end of March. And then I don't know what came out of that, but after that, he was then arrested and charged with the murder of Alex Jackson. So nobody seems to know what that means. And again, they haven't found the body, so I don't know if there's some kind of confession there. My hunch, if I can make a prediction, this is just a hunch. My hunch is that they found his truck. That's what I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Is that they located the truck and that's it. But again, that's strictly a guess. I did want to update you guys. Thank you, Zach, for reminding me about that.
And just to be clear, my hoot was not a hoot of exhalation. It was like, I mean, it was literally just like, whew, you may have guessed right. I'm not like, yay, they arrested someone, because I totally am very much trying to avoid the like, they got him about anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just really want to see what they use to make that arrest. Like, I want to know what evidence there is, because it could be, you know, you never know. It could be BS and
it could just be someone said it. And they were like, that's enough for us. Right. Like, we've seen that happen in a bunch of our cases. So
Jamie Snow's case, for example. Where there's nothing to it. So
yeah, no, anyway, I just hadn't heard that. I'm like, oh my gosh. Okay. Wow.
Oh, I didn't realize you.
I didn't know. No. I'm hearing this for the first time right now. So, wow.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So we will keep you posted on that. I'm still continuing. I have like Google alerts on set to see if there anything gets released as far as the probable cause affidavit and anything, so we can get any more information on that. What else do we have? Oh, last bit of housekeeping. I guess that was the 20-minute housekeeping section. Last bit there is, do I want to tell you guys, on May 4th, if anybody is around Northern Indiana, Zach and I we're both performing comedy at the Wagon Wheel Theater in Warsaw, Indiana, and tickets for that are available on their website, on the Wagon Wheel Theater website. And we are opening for, I don't remember, what's the guy's name?
Ryan Niemiller. He was on season 14 of America's Got Talent, took third place. Incredibly funny guy. I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a great show.
So that'd be a fun show. So if any of you guys were maybe a little further south and don't want to make the trip up to Michigan and want to see Zach and I tell dumb jokes and see someone much more talented than both of us afterwards, May 4th, Wagon Wheel Theater in Warsaw, Indiana. And I think that's what I have for housekeeping. I know, Janet, you were keeping notes on stuff. Was there anything else that needs to be touched on before we let you talk a little bit about Fred the Head?
I think that's it.
Have you ever tried to break a bad habit but felt like you were climbing Mount Everest in flip-flops? Yeah, I've been there too. But here's a breath of fresh air. Fume. It's not about giving up. It's about switching up. Fume takes your habit and simply makes it better, healthier, and a whole lot more enjoyable. Fume is an innovative, award-winning flavored air device that does just that. Instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air. Instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. And instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses delicious flavors. You get it. Instead of bad, Fume is good. It's a habit you're free to enjoy and makes replacing your bad habit easy. Your Fume comes with an adjustable airflow dial and is designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting, giving your fingers a lot to do, which is helpful for de-stressing and anxiety while breaking your habit. I wasn't sure what to expect when I first tried my Fume. I mean, it's flavored air. How could that satisfy any kind of craving I was having? But honestly, I've been amazed at how satisfying it is. It keeps me busy, the flavored air tastes great, and secret time? I really get a lot of satisfaction out of using it as a fidget. Plus, Fume just released a magnetic stand for your Fume, so there's no more losing it around the house. And it's built with fidgeting in mind. You can spin your Fume around on it. So start the year off right with the good habit by going to tryfume.com/truth and getting the journey pack today. And Fume is giving listeners of my show 10% off when they use my code TRUTH to help make starting the good habit that much easier. That's tryfume, FUM.com/truth and use my code TRUTH for 10% off. Well, we'll let you go for. Are there any actual questions about the podcast?
No. No.
No, none. Zero. Zero.
I love cool. the way you listen.
Hey, if you guys are tuned in and you're like, why is this a 25-minute episode? Your fault, not our fault. You didn't ask any questions.
Yeah.
But what did you, because I don't know how the whole case shook, because I listened to, I think, 4 or 5 episodes mm-hmm. before I interviewed Ken. And then I've listened to another like 6 or 7 since then. But like, can you kind of walk us through, like share your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I thought it was fascinating. I really appreciated his approach to research. I really felt like, you know, I feel like there's a lot of crossover with what people really dig about. I can't believe I just said dig like I'm in the like I'm on Scooby-Doo. But what people really like about what you do and your process, you know, the passion is definitely there. And I you know, I think I maybe mentioned this earlier, but I just appreciate that you can tell that he has not just a passion for the answer and to give this person back their name, but also just like the passion of sharing the process with people. And I thought it was really, I mean, it just seemed very educational to me. Like he says when he's like, hey, I thought this would be the right way to do this. Turns out maybe not so much. So why mm-hmm. am I telling you about it? Because you should know that this isn't how you should do this. And in fact, this approach made more sense and yielded more results. And so that idea of like sort of open sourcing responsibly and trying to kind of lift the conversation and the standards of, you know, armchair detective work and stuff that we're all very passionate about, and doing it the right way and doing it the respectful way, I think is never a bad thing to be exposed to. I'm totally fascinated by the case. You know, it's one of those stories that starts out like, there are just a lot of stories like this out there where someone's like, well, I moved into this area and I heard about this interesting unsolved crime. And I thought, oh, I don't know, maybe I should take a stab at it. So it's, you know, the way it starts out, you really are like, well, good luck, buddy. And then you're like, wait a minute, there are 48 episodes. So this could go any direction. You know what I mean? And then he's like so close and getting so much information so quickly. And he uncovers a bunch of stuff. And it's just really inspiring.
Yeah. And we should point out, because the audience hasn't heard this yet, because you said it before we were live.
I couldn't remember.
On the thing. Just the fact that you should know that you had not listened to Fred the Head before we did this episode.
But in the time between you announcing that you were going to have a conversation with him, which was or right around the same time, whenever someone suggested it in the chat at one point, I was like, oh, I note that down. I noted down 3. Someone said that we should do 3. Also, Murder 101 at the exact same time. So I just trust our listeners, because if they like this and I like this, then I'm going to check out what they're into. So I binged all of those. But Fred the Head was first, because I knew you were going to be talking to him and I forgot that we were taking a week off. So I just like mega binged it. And yeah, so I'm
like, through all 48 episodes.
I got through all 48 episodes. And then when you had him on, I was like, I know all this. I know that. I know this. Yep. Nope. Okay. No new information, because why would there be? Because it's a very up-to-date podcast. So I know the very last thing that happened. But it was great.
The whole concept of the name of it baffles me, that the detective just kept the head in a box and would like,
Caroline, definitely.
Hell? Like,
yeah. Caroline said, I only have one. I guess it is a question. You're right. It's more of an exclamation of like, what, WTF? But Caroline did say, I only have one question. Admittedly, I have not listened to the pod. But does anyone else feel like they buried the lead here? I.e., are we just going to skip right past the cop who kept the head in the closet? I'd like to circle back on that, please.
Yeah.
And the ending result of it is like, this poor guy has this sort of goofy, weird, macabre name because of that, essentially.
Yeah.
But why? Like that? I still don't understand it.
I don't either. And to be honest with you, I was so fascinated by the investigative part, I kind of breezed right by that. But now that I'm thinking about it, yeah, that's bananas.
Which, wait a minute, I think there was an episode that came out. Has there been, who's with me? Who's been following Fred? I think there's an episode that came out after you guys talked, or it was right beforehand. But there's this huge thing that happened that that he just released something about. And it might have been right before your conversation with him or directly after. But there was like something that had a little space before the very freshest new episode. And I was like, there was another like kind of mic drop, like, oh, whoa, okay.
See, I have to finish it now. And there are Caroline in the chat still says she has so many questions. Go ahead and ask them here. One of the questions, Veronica in the live chat said, why is DNA genealogy illegal in the UK? I was doing a little bit of research. It seems like it's just a privacy thing.
It is.
So in the UK, that it's, they consider that to be a violation of privacy, and so they're not allowed to do it, which is just so frustrating because a case like this is perfect and ripe for genetic genealogy to be used. Like, if they could just put that in and be like, oh, well, he's a relative of these people, and they could probably very quickly solve that.
Yeah.
I want to be like, Ken, listen, go in the evidence room. Find that detective who's got the head in the box, take a little chunk of bone, and ship it to me, and we'll get it done here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is the head still in a box somewhere?
I'm sure. I hope
no.
not.
No, everything's been, as I understand it, things have been reunited and everything is in one place.
Yeah.
From how I understand it.
To circle back real quick, somebody, Jen in the chat asked, as far as the Alex Jackson case, you want to know if that was the case where the dog was found with a different color collar or with a different collar. Yes, that's the one. That was kind of the weirdness with the, and we're kind of jumping around with the Alex Jackson case was, the things that were jumping out to me at the time was he had the truck and that huge trailer, and he had went up to his buddy Joe's house. And then everything from that point was he's going to Vermont, but that information came from Joe. And there was, I don't remember what they were, but and then there was like a text message that came that said something, but it was all after he was at Joe's. And it was like everything that pointed to why he was going somewhere else, you could source it all back to Joe. And that's what I found very suspicious about it. It was like, well,
yeah.
It didn't make much sense, but that was one where he then disappeared. But then his dog was found way back down south by where he lived, running around. But it had a different collar on the dog. So none of it made sense. But yeah, that was the case. And if you go back to season 13, you can find the Alex Jackson case if you want to hear any more about that. And also, somebody in the chat, I think Chris suggested Chris Lambert as far as somebody else that we should interview. He did your own backyard podcasts, and
you've talked to Chris, haven't you?
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. If you go, it was either in season 9 of Truth and Justice or on True Crime Binge.
It was season 9 of Truth and Justice because I was part of that. Yeah.
Okay. So Chris is awesome. I did. So there is an interview that I did with Chris. If you go back to season 9 and listen to that, talking about, was the Kristen Smart case, mm-hmm. right? There's like three like famous
and
smart
and since true that, crime and cases. I mean, I think everybody knows, but since that interview that you did with him, there's been a lot of
that Paul Flores is coming back to me was arrested, I think convicted,
but his dad wasn't Ruben Flores.
But that's a good one. If you want to hear Chris kind of go through that story, go listen to that interview during season 9.
And as long as we're bopping around, I'm gonna say Murder 101 also fantastic. I'm excited that you're gonna be talking to Alex. The two young women, the students who kind of are front and center for a lot of the investigation, in that they continue working on this case after they're not working in a class with him anymore. They're just doing it, are so special and so lovely. And again, just treat the whole approach with such compassion. And it's just very inspiring. It's very inspiring.
Yeah. And also, as far as if anybody wants to binge that before Sunday, that one is very bingeable.
Yeah.
There's maybe 12 episodes, and they're all like 30 minutes long. They're not very long at all.
But they're packed full of info. I mean, you really go on a journey.
So the producers of that, I also interviewed all three of them. I'm not even going to say their names, I'm going to forget them. Leidecker, I remember, was one of them. I don't remember the other three. But anyway, I interviewed all three of them on True Crime Binge when they did the Piketon Massacre podcast.
Yeah,
it's the same people that produced that one.
I've listened to that one, yeah.
Yeah, so they do an amazing job, and the Murder 101 case, it actually inspired me. I'm actually looking at maybe bringing on a couple of my students after they graduate as interns to help me do some of this, because I literally was listening to it while I was like on a run down in Hilton Head, and I'm just like, this is like it's so incredible. I don't want to. I need to share all this with Alex tomorrow. So yeah. But it was we I was like it. Like it's so incredible, and I was thinking like I like right off the top of my head, I had two students. I'm like, those two would definitely like to be a part of something like this. So maybe we'll be hearing some new names in the production team coming up this summer. We'll see.
That would be very interesting. Good point. J-Mac in the chat says, Ken and Bob really follow the same. This is just a hypothesis. I feel they're really on the same page. A conglomeration with you two to look into a case would be great. Yeah, if we ever need some crossover. Yeah, he's great. I mean, he's sort of uses the same language. He's like, I'm not saying this is what happened. I'm saying that this is where the information is leading me, and this is a suggestion, and I need to test it, but I am not saying this is what happened. Yeah, he's very careful, very thorough, very careful. Yeah, great. Great, great comment. Well said, J-Mac.
Yeah, and all the episodes I listen to, it's very genuine, and I think that's why I appreciate what he does so much, because, you know, I get this, what happens when you work on the internet is the people that disagree with you always. So I was just in a professional development class a few weeks ago, and it was talking about like conflict and discussions and how you avoid things. And I had just written down to, and it was from my own experience. It was like, how can you make basically like a meeting when people are disagreeing more productive?
Mm-hmm.
And I just, and it seemed very obvious to me, but it was shocking to me how like shocked everyone else was to hear it. Like a rule in a meeting when you're running like that, that I put forth was that you're only allowed to argue the idea or the thought and not with the person. And I think that's from years of, you know, if you go look at like comments that I deal with and stuff on social media, it's always, I present a hypothesis and then I get, you're biased, you're a jerk, you're pompous, you're all these different things about it. And I was, it looks like a kindergarten response, but I would say, I think the words you were looking for was, I disagree with you because they won't do that. They'll always, especially like through the Adnan case, it's always, oh, well, you're an asshole. Like, okay, maybe, but that's not why you disagree with me. Like, let's talk about the data here. Let's analyze the data. Anyway, I say that to say this, like I could pick up on listening to Ken that when he's saying those things, he's saying like, understand, this is just a hypothesis, that it is genuine. And I want you guys to know it is genuine when I say that too, because those are some of the comments I get. It's like, oh yeah, you just qualify it by saying that it's a hypothesis and then you just ramble on about nonsense. It's like, no, it's not an act. Like when I stress that to you, I'm telling you, like, as part of that whole thing, you know, because I'm now working with like this new group of people that have no connection to what I do here. And so when they ask me what I do here in when I try to break it down, I've kind of come up with it. I really feel like I'm not an investigator or journalist. If I had to like put it into like a box, is I'm a data analyst. When I really think about it, like that's what I do. I analyze the data and then I give you my hypothesis, my conclusions that I can draw from the data and try to make it clear that those are it like Ken says, it's a hypothesis. This is the conclusion I came to. And that's why we have the follow-ups. That's why we have the social media interaction. Because I know I'm not right all the time. I'm never convinced that I'm 100% right. Even this Alex Jackson case, for example, I never said on the podcast, I think that Joe is a likely suspect and to be looked into more, because that was my hypothesis. And I didn't feel comfortable sharing that and putting that out in a place where people could be looking in a way, because I didn't have enough data to confidently even present that hypothesis. So that's how I turned your comment about Ken into a discussion about me. You're welcome. I can listen. Why we got the time? Let me just vent to you guys a little bit. I'll tell you this. Some of the reason why I need these little breaks as I get older and I've been doing this longer is, you guys should know, it's fucking exhausting. It really is. If any of you guys could like really see into like my heart and my motivation, it is so 100% to be as accurate and as thorough as I can, and to be fair and to be open to other people's ideas. And that's why I'm doing this, and to constantly have 100,000 people, and 10,000 of those people every day are telling you that you're biased, you're arrogant, and whatever bullshit that they're throwing at me. You can only brush it off so long, but it wears you out. You know, Mike and I used to talk about that, and that's some of that is part of why Mike had, you know, there was a lot of reasons for it, but a lot of it was he just couldn't handle the social media stuff anymore. It's just too much constant negativity. Even though you have 1,000 positive comments and 2 negative ones, those 2 negative ones just
they weigh on you,
flash in front of your face all the time.
Yeah.
So, and again, your compliment to Ken, I will make that about me. But I just appreciate seeing like that somebody listened to him and picked up on that.
Yeah.
And that can speak that positivity into the work that he's doing. I appreciate that, because the little bit I got to talk to him and from listening to the podcast, he's just genuinely a guy whose heart is 100. He doesn't even, like he mentioned on the podcast, he doesn't even monetize it. He does it
right
strictly because he wants to find the truth and find some justice.
Listen, there is a definite episode where my heart just sank because he just very gently and, you know, politely said, "So I'm not on that Facebook page anymore." You know, just like so gently was like, "Now, you will no longer find me on the blah, blah, blah Facebook page. I'm going to go ahead and have to start my own." And you're just like, you're like, "Oh, yeah, it went there."
Yeah.
I'm sorry, buddy. You know, like, okay, well, that's, and it, I feel like it was almost commensurate with like exactly like the more popular his podcast became, suddenly his podcast was hugely successful. And like the very next episode, it was like, "Well, I'm going to have to retire from that den of poison. I'll be starting a new,
like real talk." It gets exhausting. So like, this is like, even like what we're doing right now, like kind of going back to the, you know, the question about, you know, when are we going to get back to investigating the case? As I said, we're working hard on it. We're doing it. But like, if you remember, we started, when I started teaching and we were looking for a case, we were going to do the missing person season, and we found out that really wasn't doable. Some of that was, a lot of it was like, I've got to, and I talked to Zach and Janet about that a lot. I was like, this has got to be something that can draw out positivity. We're like, who could argue with us trying to help people in a positive way and not be trying to draw any conclusions? But they did. They sure did. They would still find some way to talk about what a dickhead I am because I'm trying to help people.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, but I'm feeling very refreshed. And I'll also tell you again, this is all your fault for not asking any more questions, people.
I think this is great. Look, we're not even, dude, we're not even done. We're not even done. Dig that. Dig that.
Awesome.
We're not even done
it, because sister.
Some of this stuff is, like I said, you know, my number one priority is to this podcast. But when I don't have anything to like necessarily like actively deeply help with or like go crazy with, like I did with season 12, for example, I love hearing from other people what they're listening to. Most podcasts are consumed by a group of people who listens to a ton of stuff. It's not just the one person who listens. I mean, yes, there are people who are like, "I only listen to the blah 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 show because he's funny and he's weird, whatever." But like people who are into what we're into, I think a lot of the ways our brain works also makes us want to hear more and learn more and hear about more cases and hear about the good work people are doing. And I found thanks to y'all, like so many podcasts just in this interim, because you're going back to kind of the true crime binge mode a bit, sprinkling in a bit of that, this other thing where we're learning about these other podcasts. And then I have this kind of opportunity to listen to those because you're building up for this next season. So I appreciate that. And on that note, I would say, Carolyn says, by the way, this was a festival of Carolines and Carolyns, which often happens in the YouTube too. You'd think that was the most common name in the world, but it's not. It's like not. It's like a very special, Carolyn is like special, Caroline is special.
The most recent three comments on the YouTube are Caroline, different Caroline, and Cindy. They're all C's.
Yeah. Yeah. We got a lot of that letter. But Carolyn said, this reminds me of a local case here in South Australia called the Somerton Man. In the case of the Somerton Man, his remains were dug up and using his hair, a DNA profile was done. Using genetic genealogy, they were able to match Somerton Man with relatives in Victoria who had a missing great uncle last seen in 1948. Somerton Man was found dead in December 1948 on Somerton Beach. His identity has only been known in the last few years. It's a shame they can't do that for Fred the Head. And then Duncan recommends another podcast. As a Brit in NC, he says, for listeners to check out Untold, the Daniel Morgan murder. No resolution, unfortunately, but has corruption and power and an insight into the British media, which I'm very interested in. So, you know, we're getting, and then people were dropping some recommendations into today. So I think that's great. You know, that's what you wanted to do with the community as it's growing too. And when the opportunity occurs, is like support other creators and support the good ones, you know, Defense Diaries, super, super fun. Loved your conversation with Bob Mata. There's another person who seems like he's kind of cut of the same cloth. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, genuine good guy. Yeah. And that's part of it too for me is I try to seek out for some of the shows that maybe aren't like the super huge popular ones. And because if we can help other creators too, that I think, believe me, as I said, for those of you that listened to the reply brief, like in the last episode, like that was hard on me to sit there and kind of shit on somebody else's work. It's not my style. I hate doing that. So like some of this is kind of redemption for me. Is like, okay, I did that because the case is important to me and the truth is important to me. And it's something that I felt had to be done. And now it's like, let me push out to you, here's some great people. Yeah. Here's some great people that are doing great things, and go listen to their work and help them. Because I love it. I love nothing. And that was one, you know, Ken told me that, you know, some of the Truth and Justice listeners were like in this Facebook group. And he was like, right away, he was like, your people are great, because they come in and they're like, they want to help and they want to look into stuff. And they want to, you know,
they are ready to work.
Yeah.
Ready and hungry.
Veronica shouting out Voices for Justice, Sarah Turney's podcast. Yeah. That first season, that when she's, I mean, her reasons, her personal reasons for getting into the true crime space are heartbreaking and fascinating. And she has done so much amazing work. And I think I mentioned this on a past podcast, but I thought Julie Murray's podcast about her sister Maura was wonderfully done. It was so good.
I definitely
highly recommend it. That's a very quick listen. I mean, it's like 8-ish, very solid episodes. They just did a conversation kind of follow up where they answered listener questions that Sarah guided through with Julie. And it was really good. It was a great.
Is that on Sarah's feed? Or?
Yeah, she's an executive producer on it.
Oh, I'll have to look.
It's called Media Pressure. Yes. Caroline. Huh. I just looked. Yes. It is definitely the one who just did Media Pressure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I might have to reach out to her because I've met her, Maura Murray's sister.
Yeah.
A couple times. And yeah, I might have to reach out to her because that would be super interesting. Funny thing about, not funny, but it with Sarah. So I actually recorded a long, great interview with Sarah to be on either season 9 or True Crime Binge, but it was right before her dad was going to trial. Oh. And we recorded the whole thing. And the day before it was ready to drop, the lawyers or somebody was like, she's like, can you please not air that? Because they said, I can't because of the trial coming up. And so, of course, I respected that and never aired it. So, because I was going to say, like, yeah, I've interviewed Sarah. You guys should go listen. It was like, oh, but that never made the air. It never got out. So, I'm going to talk to Sarah again, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely want to listen to Media Pressure. That's fascinating. Because I was so way back in the day, for those of you that are like been listening to the True Crime podcast since 2014, 2015. There weren't a lot of them back in the day, and so Missing Maura Murray was one of the ones, Tim and Lance, that I was hooked into back in the day when that was going out. And then I interviewed them too, and I didn't even realize it was like years later, they're still going. They're still
after on. Interviewed them, I really got into that case as well. I was really deep diving into that case as well.
Those guys, I mean, I really like those guys, and I think they were doing, again, like we were all, so many of us were learning on our feet with podcasting and with, you know, investigation and stuff, and I've never doubted that their hearts were in the right places, but there was so much around that case. Just trying to kind of pick through all of the different things that are just like kind of bubble up. And it's like, is this real? You don't know. Should I take this seriously? Blah, blah, blah. So it's a very different, very clean, crisp, very personal perspective from inside of the family. And I can't recommend it enough. I thought it was great.
That's awesome. So if you go to the Voices for Justice feed, there's a season.
Yeah, or just anywhere you get podcasts, just look up Media Pressure. You'll find it.
Yeah, but I mean, is it its own podcast or is it part of the
Voices for Justice its own podcast. It is its own podcast.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, look up for the podcast Media Pressure for sure.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah, I will check that out. And maybe I might reach out to Julie. That'd be cool to talk to her about that. And look at us with two questions on the books. We're 40 minutes in.
That's right.
Solid piece of business.
That's right.
Are there any more questions?
That really was it. I just wanted to throw those shout outs out there and then some to get those recommendations out there too.
Awesome. So in the meantime, between now and Sunday, if you guys want to check out, and again, this one's very bingeable. It's not very long. Murder 101 is a really cool story. And so what it was, when I first got into it, I thought that Alex in his class like made this podcast, and that's not what happened. Him and his class investigated the case. And then after it got all this attention, then iHeartMedia did a podcast about that process. And they're in it, in the whole thing. And the producers of that, again, I apologize to all three of you because I've met all three of you, interviewed all three of you, and I can only think of the one name. If you like the Piketon Massacre podcast, those folks are the ones that put this one together. And it's very good. So you can always binge that. And then again, if you're live now on Tuesday night when we record. Also, I should point this out because I get all the time we have people like message and email and stuff and they're like, how do I catch the lives? I never know when the lives are. And it occurred to me not everybody is on the Facebook group where we post that stuff. But generally speaking, if you're hearing this and you're wondering, if you go to the Truth and Justice Podcast YouTube channel and subscribe and turn on notifications, you'll get a notification when we go live. Generally speaking, it is around 8 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday evenings is when we record these. So if you were now just after months and months and months of it, just decided now maybe I should tell you guys in the podcast, that's where. And with that being said, I think we should wrap things up. As I mentioned, I've been running around like crazy all day. I should probably go into the house and make sure that my youngest has not burned it down.
We don't want that.
With that being said,
we
will let you guys go. Thanks so much for listening, supporting. Thanks for everybody that's on Patreon. Thanks for keeping the lights on for us. And we will talk to you guys next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production. All music for the show is created and composed by Shane Yoder at PutThemInASong.com. The font you see on all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com designed, created, manages, and maintains our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Erica Cantor, Melissa Cardenas, Kaywood Yomnick, and Danielle Rohr. And as always, thank you to all of you for your engagement and your support. If you like the show and you want to support us, you can do that in a number of ways. The number one way for you to support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. If you join our Patreon, not only will you be financially supporting our work, but you'll also get something for your pledge. For just $5 per month, you'll get all episodes ad-free and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups that include an hour-long pre-show chat exclusive to our patrons. Other levels will get you a Truth and Justice Army t-shirt, Truth and Justice hats, and even the opportunity to co-host a Friday follow-up episode. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny, and it goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a case that you'd like us to consider covering, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page, follow us on Instagram, or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters out there, you can connect with us on Twitter @TruthJusticePod. To follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found @BobRuffTruth, Janet can be found @JanetVarney, and Zach is @Z2TheQ. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.